When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse on the St. Patrick's Day weekend. It's a beautiful Saturday morning in the city of Chicago. David Haw, Bruce Levine, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And it is our pleasure. Now joining us on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline is Cubs legend Rick Sutcliffe. Download the Circus Sports app today. Good morning, Sut. How are you?
David, I'm doing well. What's going on with you guys?
We're enjoying a beautiful day in Chicago. We're anticipating a big season on the north side. The Cubs, I have to say today, feel like favorites in the NL Central. Do you consider the Cubs favorites in that division this year, Sut?
Yeah, David, I mean, I do for a lot of reasons. You think about Milwaukee, and are they better or are they not? I mean, we got their manager. Their opening day pitcher's in Baltimore. St. Louis has a lot of issues. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati's an up-and-coming team, but I kind of look at Cincinnati like we were the last couple of years with, you know, there's pieces there, but there's still a lot of things missing. I really think this is the most complete team that the Cub fans have seen in a while. I think it's the best club for a lot of reasons. And, you know, I go to bed every night singing Go Cubs Go. I mean, it's really been a great spring.
Sut, how has pitching changed in spring training since you were a young pitcher in the 70s till now? It appears to me that every spring training now, the manager and the front office are just hoping somehow to get through the pitching staff without somebody getting hurt or more than one or two guys getting hurt, rather than just getting them ready. What is your philosophy on guys getting ready now, and how is it different?
You know, Bruce, that's a great question. And I'll be honest with you, I think the first question manager Craig Counsell asked me is, you know, how is the pitching different than when it was in your day? And my answer was straight and clear: they're better. Hitting has never been harder. The velocity is unbelievably up from where it was back in the 80s and 90s. The information that a pitcher has is incredible. And I think you see with everything that baseball's doing, the bigger bases, the pitch clock, everything they're doing, they lowered the mound back in the 60s. They're trying to create more offense because that's what the fans want. And it's just really difficult to do because the pitching is so elevated. The way they prepare is just so much different now. These weighted balls, you look at Javier Assad. I mean, I saw him a couple years ago throwing 88 to 92. He's throwing 96 now. You look at what's going on with Drew Smiley. He'll be on the bump today for our game with Marquis. He averaged the last time out 94 miles an hour. He hasn't done that since he was a reliever with Detroit. So there's just a lot of ways to get better. There's not a better pitching coach in baseball than Tommy Hotovy and his staff. I mean, Daniel Moskos and all of the things that go into that. But it's just really, really difficult to hit this day and age.
When you look back at your career and you see what's available to pitchers now in the way of information and analytics and all the things that you can use start to start, team to team and matchup to matchup, how would you have incorporated more? Do you think you would have, or would you have relied on your talent and ability over maybe some of the information and data that would be at your disposal?
You know, David, I honestly think I would have had a lot better career. I think the number one thing I think of is that there's a DH in both leagues. And as you guys know, my career was off and running until I tore my hamstring trying to beat out a double play. But I just think that I always had command. I could locate the fastball. And if you would have given me the information on where to throw the fastball to avoid the most damage in a hitter's swing, I think I could have consistently stayed there. I can remember after a game, whether I would win or lose, the next morning when I would wake up, I would look at the opponent that I had coming up in 4 or 5 days, and all I cared about was who's scoring runs and who's driving in runs. I don't care about that 3-0, 1-0 guy. I don't care about the guy hitting 300 but not scoring a run and not having an RBI. And, David, being honest with you, that's the only scouting report I ever really had on any of those guys leading up to a start until, of course, I had faced that team, and then I had my own notes.
I would have loved to seen you with the 18-second clock and how Rick Sutcliffe would have handled that, because the ball wasn't always delivered in 18 seconds. And part of your success, I always felt, was the fact that each pitch meant something really special to that to that game. I wonder what your philosophy is about the pitch clock and how that would impacted you and how it's impacted the game.
You know, Bruce, that's a great question. I think it would have helped me. I think maybe sometimes I thought too much. I know that a couple of times when I was with the Dodgers, our pitching coach, Red Adams, would say, hey, work as quick as you can. And when I look back on it, it was some of the better games that I had. I think sometimes maybe I just overthought things. But I love the changes in the game. I love the fact that the shift is gone. I love the fact that there's a pitch clock. There's more action. And really, it goes back a couple years ago. I had a conversation with Theo. We left the All-Star game, Ryder and I, up in L.A. And I asked him, I go, the All-Star game was awesome. He goes, Gramps, the Home Run Derby was better. And I'm like, why? He goes, there was always something happening. Well, when Theo heard that, I mean, the next thing you know, the following year, there's all kinds of changes to try to, you know, get people like my 11-year-old grandson more excited about the game than Home Run Derby.
So you've been in Arizona. You've seen the Cubs pitching depth in the rotation. You've seen some of the young guys. So I was wondering, as you look at this team and this staff with 12 days before opening day, anybody stand out that we haven't necessarily talked about or maybe is being overlooked, one of those young guys that may have surprised some people? Because it seems like every year, you mentioned Hadavi, they seem to find guys in a bullpen. They seem to do more with less. They seem to find these diamonds in the rough and use them to their advantage.
You know, David, I listen to your show when I can, you and Bruce, and inside the clubhouse. I don't know that I could come up with something that you guys haven't come up with. Maybe I can emphasize something that people have talked about, maybe not talked enough about. First of all, as Bruce knows, I'm 8-0 this spring. I was here when pitchers and catchers reported, and then I went back to watch some Little League baseball games. The 8 games that I've been out here in Arizona, we've heard that song after every game. Now, you say, what happened yesterday? You're in Arizona. Well, I stuck back because I was going to watch the Futures game. I was going to watch the young prospect. I was all excited about that. Cade Horton was going to be on the mound. Blah, blah. You know, it didn't happen. We got rained out. I should have been over at the other place where we got beat 3-2. But I will say this. I'll go pretty quick. Shota, Neris, and Bush, they're going to make us better, obviously. Michael Bush has a big league bat. He's going to be fine. Justin and Kyle are all set. You got a lot of depth in that rotation. Yeah, Tyon going down, it hurts, but, you know, we're covered. It's like you said with the bullpen that's going on. I asked several people, I said, why is this team better? Several players, I'm not going to mention names, but they right away, every one of them mentioned the bullpen. The last couple of years when we've been down here, we've added pieces to the bullpen the last 2 weeks of the season. Last year's bullpen was supposed to be Cody Hoyer, Keegan Thompson, and Brandon Hughes. Well, what happened? None of those guys were able to really perform. You had Fulmer, you had Boxberger. That didn't happen. And then all of a sudden you patched it up, you get on a roll, and then a lot of guys that had never pitched in September, they don't have September's in the minor league, they ran out of gas. They, you know, whether it was a pennant race or what it was. There's a lot of things going on there. But if there's one thing that I think I could tell you that maybe you guys haven't talked a lot about or enough about, is Dansby Swanson. I'm telling you right now, in my opinion, without Dansby Swanson, we don't get Cody Bellinger. Those guys talked constantly. And I can only imagine Dansby telling him, hey, if you leave here, you're going to regret it. When I walked in that first day, Bellinger was sitting by Dustin Kelly, the hitting coach that helped turn him around last year. Let me ask you this. Do you guys think Nico wins a gold glove at shortstop?
Hmm.
I don't think he does, because I think Dansby was there, right? But you move him over to second, you get better. We get better in so many ways. And the one thing maybe I'll tell you that you got, I was privy to be in Craig Council's first meeting. And the first thing he talked about was connect. You got to connect with all of your teammates. And he went on and on about how important it is and how much I agree with it. So we go out there in the field, and they're taking infield practice. And they get done with that. The pitchers over here, outfielders over there, a lot of going on. And all of a sudden, Jonathan Motis said, hey, we got about 10 minutes to kill. Let's chat and everything. And all, you know, he looked at me, he said, tell us a joke, tell us a story, whatever. Like, I get him laughing. And then Dansby goes, hey, Michael Bush, tell me about you. And this is in front of like 10 infielders. And all of a sudden, like, we hear he's from Minnesota. He grew up playing hockey and football. He's one of six kids in his family. On and on and on about great things. And then Nico goes, hey, Matt Shaw, tell me about you. What's going on? I mean, Matt Shaw's here to try to take one of those guys' jobs. But, you know, it's just Matt Shaw starts talking about all these great things. And just the connection that went on there all of a sudden spread to where the pitchers were doing it, the bullpen was doing it. And it's been a different spring. It's really been an exciting spring. And I think more than anything, you can ask the Cub fans and the guys and what they've seen down here. As Craig Counsell said about the way he feels about the game of baseball, I want to suffocate the opponent's offense. Well, you take a look at what's going on. I mean, when we've had a lead, this team has been able to hold it. Even with the guys, a lot of the guys are not going to be with the team. They'll be in double A or triple A.
So a whole other subject is the best connected people in baseball history and maybe right now. And pound for pound, I would say that you and Harold Reynolds are the best connected guys in the entire game of baseball. I was having a conversation with Craig Counsell with a couple other reporters about 3 weeks ago, and he said, Rick Sutcliffe's the only guy I know that can walk into any clubhouse and go back into the trainer's part and in the food part of their clubhouse and be accepted and be just like one of the guys in the game of baseball. How does one become Rick Sutcliffe, that accepted everywhere?
You know, first of all, thank you. I think one thing Don Drysdale told me when I was an 18-year-old kid in spring training, he goes, don't forget the little guy. And I, even though back in the day when I wasn't making any money, when I'd leave a visiting clubhouse, I would tip all the kids. And a lot of times, being honest, it was $5 or $10 because that's all I had. But all of a sudden, you know, 10 years later, those little kids have become the head clubhouse guys. It's happened with the Cubs. It has happened everywhere. And, you know, the little guys, they don't forget that stuff. And, yeah, I don't feel that there's a clubhouse that I can't go into. I'll tell you something, too, that has been a huge asset for me has been I wore the very first pair of Nike baseball shoes ever. I'm the president of the grassroots division. Up until COVID, they had an all-star trip every year with their top 20 players. I started out with Mike Schmidt, Steve Carlton, Ken Griffey Sr., and it turned into Griffey Jr. and Jeter and Maddox and Grace. And, you know, the list goes on and on. And you know, when I walk into a clubhouse, and I'll tell you, Pittsburgh was the one that got me. I didn't really know anybody, but I'd gotten to know Andrew McCutchen on the Nike trip. And all of a sudden, Cuts comes up, starts hollering my name, hugging me, all of this, and then all these other guys kind of look like, oh, well, if Cuts think he's cool, then he's got to be okay. So it's just, you know, just trying to be a good teammate. You know, I think back to what ESPN told me after they had hired me. They did a background check on me, and one of the guys they called was Cal Ripken Jr., and they said, Cal, what do you think about Sut as a broadcaster? And he goes, I don't know. He said, I have no idea. He said, I'll tell you this. He was a great teammate. That's one of the things. That's the thing I started out with yesterday. As you know, Bruce, when Theo hired me, he didn't hire me. He asked me to come to spring training back in 2012. He asked me to speak to all the minor league pitchers and catchers. And we did that for the longest time. And then COVID hit, and we hadn't got around to it. Craig Counsell asked me to do it yesterday. And I took Dansby Swanson with me, and I took Yan Gomes. And I told the guys, I go, why did I choose these two guys? Yeah, they both won a World Series, but they're the most prepared people that I've ever been around. We talked about voices and choices. We talked about something Michael Jordan taught me back when I was in Chicago all those years, was the word halt. And I mean, it meant a lot to me, especially in a town like Chicago, where you can get yourself in trouble. There's lots of things you can do that you shouldn't be doing. You know, the word halt stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And I explain it to all these kids, hungry, not only for your stomach, but for your soul. Where are you at? What are you thinking right now? Angry. Dansby Swanson talked about what happened when he went to Vanderbilt was the head coach there took the anger out of him and turned it into passion. Passion's great. There's no room in anything, anywhere for anger. Lonely. And Michael says it's okay to be alone, but it's not to be lonely. And it might not only be you that's lonely, but it might be one of your teammates. Go up there and connect with that guy. And the tired things, obviously, just take care of yourself. Get your rest. Be prepared. It was really cool that when it all went out, I mean, we got a nice standing ovation. I like that all the coaches come up and thanked us, because I told each one of those guys, I go, why are we here? We've been in your shoes. We've been there. But you got to understand, it can happen quick. I talked about a guy, Luke Little, started out last year in A-ball, Double-A, Triple-A, and ended up in the big leagues. Now he's probably going to be a big part of our bullpen. It can happen. It can happen in a hurry. But there's a reason you're here and not over there on the big league side. And I asked him, I said, do you know what that reason is? Because if you don't, there's pitching coaches here that do. And if you want to know the answer, they're happy to give it to you, but you better be prepared for the truth. Happened to me, it happened to everybody. I got told I couldn't get my breaking ball over consistently enough by Del Crandall. Well, you know what? By the end of the year, I did. That was 1978. I got called up in September, and I never went back to the minor leagues after that. I don't know if it would have happened without Del Crandall being honest with me.
That's great stuff, Sa. It's really well-intentioned, and also for them to hear that from you. Final minute here with Rick Sutcliffe on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So as connected as you are with the depth of your experience, if you have a conversation with Craig Counsell and you could tell him something about spending a season in Chicago in the Cub dugout, being the manager of this franchise, what would you tell him? Have you had that conversation with him? Because he clearly respects you.
I have not yet, but as you guys know, what I would tell him is, hey, after the game, go over to Murphy's and have a beer with the fans, connect with them there, and if you're hungry when you leave there, go see Dave Flom over at Chicago Cut. You can have a great dinner, and you'll run into a lot of Cub fans there. I think about one of the great moments in Chicago for me was I was having dinner at Chicago Cut. I don't remember who I was with or whatever. It was 2016. It was like in August or whatever. And David Ross walked in with his family and his parents. And all of a sudden, the whole place stood up applauding. And Rossi and I talked a lot about it. He was like, that's the moment when he kind of went, oh, wait a minute. What's going on here? It ended up leading, of course, to a parade. But, you know, it's just I was able to connect with the fans. As you guys know, my wife and I, we started the foundation there. I gave away 50 tickets to every game that I was with the Cubs from the day that I was there to people that normally couldn't come. I visited a lot of the hospitals. I didn't really know it was the word connect. I just knew that it was an important part in my life. And, you know, the biggest thing that I learned through the foundation was that, you know, 5,000 of my dollars wasn't worth as much as 5 minutes of my time to a Cub fan, to a kid, to whatever, a grandma or whatever it might be. I just think that because connecting is so important to Craig, I think things are going to go really, really well for him.
Sid, in closing with you, David, and I certainly appreciate the time. And gosh, the great stories and the great career. You've had such a huge impact on me and my career over the last 40 years. I'll just thank you for that, because it is 40 years ago this year that the 84 Cubs came onto the map and changed not only the way that Cub fans looked at their team and expectations, but the way Chicago looked at what they expected. Winners, the Bears, the Bulls, the White Sox eventually came out of that What are your thoughts about 40 years ago and not only the impact on your life, but the huge impact that you've had on Chicago?
The thing that comes to mind to begin with is, you know, I started my career with the Dodgers, Bruce, and in 1984, like in August or whatever, when we went back there, I had seen some great teams. I had seen the Big Red Machine. I'd seen a lot of great teams come into L.A., and it was 90% Dodger fans every game. And then all of a sudden, that 84 team showed up in L.A., and all of a sudden, Jody comes up to hit, and the crowd starts singing Jody Davis, Eric Carey's song. And then Rhino come up like in the eighth inning, and they started chanting MVP. It was like there was a ton more Cub fans at that ball game than there were Dodger fans. I had never seen that in the 3 years that I was there. I was there in 81 when the Dodgers won the World Series. Everywhere we went, we might not have hit in the bottom of the ninth, but that team was kind of beloved. I mean, Cub fans came out from everywhere, and I just think it was kind of the beginning of all the Cub fans getting back on board like they were, you know, back in the late 60s with the great teams that Ernie and Billy and Fergie and Ron were a part of. I think everybody got back on, and you know, obviously they were on in 16 and 17 and all of that, and it's been a while since this team won a playoff game. I think you got to go back to 2017. In my opinion, I mean, that's all going to change. And I'll tell you in closing, both of you, David and Bruce, I apologize for being long. As you can tell, I'm kind of passionate about this. A couple years ago, Bruce, you remember, you did the interview, and I told you that Ian Happ, even after his elbow surgery and all that, I said, I'm telling you, I see the maturity in him. I'm predicting he's going to be an all-star. Well, it ended up being an all-star. I got a great bottle of wine from Ian Happ because he remembered that. I'm predicting right now, Christopher Morel is going to be down in Arlington representing the National League in that all-star game. A lot like Ian, to where they put him out in left field and they left him. Leave him alone. It's your job. You got the whole year. Go do what you do. I think they're going to do the same thing with Christopher, and I think they're going to benefit in a huge way with that bat of his.
Love that prediction. Love your passion, and so thank you for everything this morning and always.
You guys got it. We'll see you out there today. Check out Marquee if y'all get a chance.
Sounds good. Rick Sutcliffe, Cub legend. Lot to say, and he will be in the booth when the Cubs play this afternoon. Spring training game, Rick Sutcliffe on the Marquee Sports Network. Great stuff there, Bruce. Wow.
You always need an hour for
something. You do need an hour.
I mean, he is just...
It's great.
Because, like he said, yeah, he's a little long-winded, but, you know, after you size up the interview and you hear it all, you go, that was some uniquely interesting stuff, you know, and I've always found him to be that way, and what a great decision he made by not signing with San Diego after that 84 season and staying a Chicago Cub.
We mentioned the Cubs in action today, and certainly it's right here on the Score, 255 with Zach Zaidman and Ron Coomer, our guys on the call. So for the latest news on the Cubs or the White Sox, try listening to chapters from our show throughout the Odyssey app, and you can do that going back. Each topic we cover is broken out. It's very easy to use, so you don't miss a thing. To get started, download the Odyssey app now, then search for 670 The Score and tap on a recent episode of our show. We'll talk to Ethan Katz, the White Sox pitching coach. We'll switch gears to talk Sox when we come back on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Let the double or triple.
In a left center field and deep. This is a tie ball game.
Dating producer of baseball, Harry Coyle. 1-1 pitch.
Oh! He hits it to deep left center. Look out. Do you believe it? It's gone.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Welcome back. Yes, we are here inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, until 11 o'clock. That was a clip from, obviously, 1984. Everybody of a certain age remembers that day.
June 23rd, 1984.
Ryan Sandberg going deep against the Cardinals. Bob Costas on the call. Bruce, we just had a great interview with Rick Sutcliffe. We're going to talk to Ethan Katz shortly. He mentioned 1984. You asked him about it. It's been 40 years. We'll spend the season kind of reminiscing at various times. But I ask you this. You know, 2016 was transformational in the Cub organization for reasons that obviously are still resonating today. But I look at that 84 team, and I think you lived through it. I'm not going to go so far, get over my ski. That wasn't bigger than the team that won the World Series. But that was probably as important of a Cub team and season as we've experienced in our lifetimes. And I know 69 was big. 84 was, I think, bigger because of what it represented, not only in the Cubs on the field, just the announcement that, boy, this is a different time. It's a different team. So many reasons why, but that year was magical.
Well, it was transformational in the fact that you look at the fact that the Cubs had not been to a playoff since 1945. The White Sox the year before had the 83 team, first time they had been to the playoffs since 1959. It was a sign that we no longer had to accept the reality that in Chicago, we're all a bunch of lovable losers, okay? We don't make it. And the White Sox, to their credit, from 51 through 64, were not losers. If there was a playoff format during that time, they would have gone to the playoffs every single year from 51 to 64. But the reality was neither team had. The Cubs had this lovable loser thing where people wore it as a badge of honor, but it wasn't. There wasn't much honor in the fact that your team lost every year.
But do you agree that 84, just not only because of on the field what they did, and certainly it didn't end well, but the winning, you said the playoffs first time in such a long time, but also the marketing of the team kind of brought us into the modern era. It was Harry Caray and making the Cubs cool and fun, and Wrigley Field the place to be. Now, there were certainly times and moments that was true before 84, but it did seem to change after that year.
Well, it was Dallas Green. So Dallas Green came in, you know, blazing with guns out, saying, we're building a new tradition. Wow. Cub fans did not react very good to that. But the reality was they needed a new tradition. That tradition was winning, okay? And Dallas brought that with him. And he brought a lot of the players with him, too, from Philadelphia in probably one of the greatest trades in baseball history, getting Ryan Sandberg as a throw-in player on a Larry Boa for Ivan De Jesus trade.
Ivan De Jesus.
Right.
Yeah.
De Jesus helped the Phillies win the pennant that year in 83. But the reality was is that the Chicago Cubs did build a new tradition, that is, no more lovable loser. It's not acceptable anymore. And, you know, again, you jump forward to 2016 and, you know, the Epstein-led, we're going to win a World Series. Tom Ricketts buying the team in 2009 saying, our only goal is to win a World Series.
I just thought it was worth mentioning. We talked to Sutton. You talk about that season, and certainly he came here midway through that year in the famous trade, one of the best the Cubs have ever made. And still here we are 40 years later. He's a legend in Cubdom because of what he did that year. And he still is talking to minor leaguers and telling them about the Cub way all these years later.
I don't know. Joe Carter had a good career.
He did.
I think he won a World Series, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. The shot heard round Canada. I still remember that one.
That ball landed 10 feet from me.
No kidding? You were at that game?
So that was all auxiliary press. In left field.
Put it in your pocket.
I couldn't.
Away,
it was a row down from me, but it landed right there. And that, you know,
slow reaction.
Part of baseball history. If you can find me in the film,
slow instincts.
Try to delete it. If you can.
Bruce Levine, great reporter. Slow instincts.
Wow.
going after the home run ball.
Good feet though.
Quick feet. All right. When we come back, Ethan Katz, White Sox pitching coach. Lots to talk to Ethan Katz about. A lot of news in the White Sox camp. We'll talk to him about the starting rotation, Michael Kopech, and more. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
not my first choice where I want to be. I like starting, but I've had success in that role. Ultimately, we're looking at what's best for the team this year. And if I can help us win games in the back half of the game, I'm excited to do that.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
That was a dejected Michael Kopech talking about his demotion earlier this week, going into the bullpen, not in the rotation. David Haw, Bruce Levine, final segment here on Inside the Clubhouse. Ethan Katz is going to reschedule for next week or in the future. He's got a closed-door meeting that he is probably figuring out what to do about the rotation, maybe what to do about the bullpen. Bruce, how would you use Michael Kopech, a guy with no control, so that maybe limits how much you want to trust him as a closer? Even though he has the stuff to be a closer, he does not have the command or control yet.
You have three choices. You turn him into a bullpen guy that can close.
Mm-hmm.
You trade him to another team.
Mm-hmm.
Or you give him his outright release.
You're not doing that.
Only because of what you thought Michael Kopech was,
mm-hmm,
or what Michael Kopech is. Are you refusing? Is this a Chicago refusal to give up on somebody that was supposed to be that good?
He's a symbol of the failed rebuild from 2016. It began when Michael Kopech arrived. Going back, Chris Sale traded, remember, December 2016. That was the beginning of something the Sox really hadn't done under Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. They had always tried to, let's get this veteran and let's overstate the value of this veteran and let's try to contend and get people coming to the ballpark. When they traded Sale, it was a recognition and an acceptance that they had to do it differently. Michael Kopech not being able to fulfill that potential, to me, symbolizes the end of that era, if you will, or error. I still think he has value to you more than just letting him go outright. I don't know if the team would trade for him, but I do think there would be an organization out there, Bruce, that says, look at that stuff, look at that arm. We're going to do what the White Sox couldn't. We're going to get inside that head and figure out how he can be better from the shoulders up.
You better bring some company if you're going there. And again, Michael is the sweetest, nicest young guy to deal with in the world. He tries hard. He gives everything he has. But as far as his ability to get the most out of himself, he's had a lot of barriers. Some of it is off the field, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's had some maturity issues that he's had to deal with. He's had some life issues that have been real. He had Tommy John. He had COVID. He had all kinds of issues that kept him from pitching for 2 years. I'll tell you, I'm a believer that he can still be a bullpen guy, David, but you're going to have to make it simple for him at the end of the game.
You think it could be a case of change of scenery, which a lot of guys benefit from. I wonder what Michael Kopech's new start would look like. But it's not hard for me to imagine the Sox moving on, getting what they can, and Michael Kopech in a year from now being a guy who starts the season 10-2, back in rotation because he's suddenly unlocked whatever was keeping
him back. He's not a rotation guy, never has been. Okay, so to me, the salvation for Michael Kopech and the White Sox right now is they don't have a for sure closer, right? So take Michael Kopech, take away a couple pitches, mm-hmm, and say you're a slider fastball pitcher. You're going to get your slider over for a strike in the ninth inning to the first hitter. And from that point on, you're going to dominate with your fastball and place your breaking ball in there where you need it. You're going to be the Bobby Jenks of this era.
Okay? Wow. So you think you reduce his pitch repertoire and he'll be more effective because he won't have as much to consider between pitches and maybe his control and command will improve?
Keep it simple, and more importantly, something that we miss about an athlete, let the baseball athlete feel good about himself again. Because this is a baseball athlete that doesn't feel very good about himself.
That's obvious every time he talks. Every time he talks, I just want to, you want to go find your dog and hug your dog because you feel so like, oh my gosh, am I depressed? He's got no confidence. And I think he carries that onto the mound, that lack of confidence. And so it's difficult to have command when you lack confidence.
Two things that also bother me about baseball, and that is Ethan Katz and the pitching people are very good with the White Sox. Not everybody can resonate with every pitcher, okay? Go hire a Bobby Jenks before the baseball season starts, and he's the manager of an independent league team. Go have him talk to this guy. The conversations they have and the belief of a guy like Bobby Jenks, who had such a troubled life before he became a valuable part of the White Sox championship team. He's the ideal guy. Somebody that's close, somebody that had trouble starting, somebody that's had trouble, you know, in life and then became a good athlete. These are the people that you try to bring in to salvage what should still be a good baseball career for Michael Cole.
It couldn't hurt, Bruce. Before we get out of here, let's end the show like we began it, looking at the White Sox and the trade this week of Dylan Cease to the Padres. Wanted to know, so what that does to the organizational, the minor league system. When Chris Getz was elevated to GM, and I think there was some controversy there, we don't need to revisit that. But how would you assess what this trade does to what the White Sox are trying to do to their minor league system and where that puts them maybe overall? MLB Pipeline rated the top 30, the top minor league systems in baseball. The Cubs came in at number 2. The Padres, where the Sox got their prospects from, were number 4. How has Chris Getz attacked this in a way that has helped the White Sox elevate on those rankings?
I think the most important thing is reshuffling, getting rid of guys first. You know, he had a strong comment as any baseball executive I've heard in the last 30 years in the fall saying, I think it was around Christmas time, maybe the winter meetings, saying, I don't like the team. I don't like the players on the team. He basically said, I don't like what we have, okay? It's a strong comment from a general manager. It's an honest comment.
It's honest. He took some heat for it, but it was also candid.
Because he was saying, I don't dislike these guys personally.
It was accountable.
Yeah. They're not baseball players that show up and expect if they don't win that day, they're not upset about it. I think you'd walk around the White Sox locker room last year and it would be like, okay, you know, we're going to lose another ball game today. So what? The season will be over soon. As a baseball man and as a former player and as a really smart young executive, he saw this with the White Sox. So I think it's elimination and then addition. And I think the addition part is coming. It's not going to be necessarily easy, but I think they've identified some good young players. I'm not one of these guys that goes, oh, we're rated the number 10th farm system. We're going to be better next year. It's not necessarily working that way, but getting better players, getting better makeup, I applaud the White Sox for doing that.
12 days away from opening day, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe next Saturday we can do our predictions. Those are always fun to bring back.
Yeah, we're always looking stupid the rest of the year.
I don't know. I think that maybe I had a couple last year that came true. We just conveniently ignored them.
It's a good thing you're not going to be... Don't break your arm patting yourself.
I'm just saying. I think that I picked Ohtani for doing something, and he did a lot.
You picked Ohtani to do...
That wasn't exactly out on a limb, but I remember getting some abuse from you for that.
For Ohtani?
Yes, I think it was.
I said I didn't like Ohtani?
You picked Luis Robert to do something. Well, anyway, next week we'll do our predictions.
Bad. Wasn't a bad pick.
And hold each other responsible and accountable. And you know what you can do tomorrow here right on the score? Tune in between 6 and 8. Tomorrow's Selection Sunday, also St. Patrick's Day. Tune in 6 to 8 for BetQL's Countdown to Tip-Off as Nick Costos, our guy, and Ken Barkley break down the brackets immediately after the release. Who will be the best bets to cut down the nets? Don't know, but find out. Countdown to Tip-Off on BetQL tomorrow, 6 to 8, right here on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. We have some people to thank.
Don't forget, more baseball on The Score every Sunday. including starting tomorrow with Hit and Run.
Hit and Run's back.
It's back.
Speegs is back?
Speegs is back.
Is he going to sing?
I hope not, but
I hope so.
He always puts together a great baseball show.
That is great.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's terrific.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there this weekend, and enjoy responsibly a great time.
Absolutely. Thank you to Robbie Triano, our great producer. Thank you to Rick Sutcliffe, who joined us and had a great conversation and interview. And thank you, Bruce, for showing up and getting Sut and everything else.
People can follow me on Twitter, David, at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com, where I write both Cubs and Sox. David, baseball season is approaching. I could not be more excited.
Cannot wait. It's a good way to interrupt draft talk and all of the QB1 debates right here in Chicago. Thank you for listening. Talk to you Monday on the Mullin & Haas Show. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 670thescore.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
It's not my first choice where I want to be. I like starting, but I've had success in that role. Ultimately, we're looking at what's best for the team this year. And if I can help us win games in the back half of the game, I'm excited to do that.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
That was a dejected Michael Kopech talking about his demotion earlier this week, going into the bullpen, not in the rotation. David Haugh, Bruce Levine, final segment here on Inside the Clubhouse. Ethan Katz is going to reschedule for next week. Or in the future, he's got a closed-door meeting that he is probably figuring out what to do about the rotation, maybe what to do about the bullpen. Bruce, how would you use Michael Kopech, a guy with no control, so that maybe limits how much you want to trust him as a closer, even though he has the stuff to be a closer, he does not have the command or control yet?
You have three choices. You turn him into a bullpen guy that can close.
Mm-hmm.
You trade him to another team,
mm-hmm.
or you give him his outright release.
You're not doing that.
Only because of what you thought Michael Kopech was,
mm-hmm.
or what Michael Kopech is. Are you refusing? Is this a Chicago refusal to give up on somebody that was supposed to be that good?
He's a symbol of the failed rebuild from 2016. It began when Michael Kopech arrived. Going back, Chris Sale traded, remember, December 2016. That was the beginning of something the Sox really hadn't done under Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn. They had always tried to, well, let's get this veteran and let's overstate the value of this veteran and let's try to contend and get people coming to the ballpark. When they traded Sale, it was a recognition and an acceptance that they had to do it differently. Michael Kopech not being able to meet that, fulfill that potential, to me, symbolizes the end of that era, if you will. Or error. I still think he has value to you more than just letting him go outright. I don't know if the team would trade for him, but I do think there would be an organization out there, Bruce, that says, look at that stuff. Look at that arm. We're going to do what the White Sox could, and we're going to get inside that head and figure out how he can be better from the shoulders up.
You better bring some company if you're going there. And again, Michael's the sweetest, nicest young guy to deal with in the world. He tries hard. He gives everything he has. But as far as his ability to get the most out of himself, he's had a lot of barriers. Some of it is off the field, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's had some maturity issues that he's had to deal with. He's had some life issues that have been real. He had Tommy John, he had COVID, he had all kinds of issues they kept him for pitching for 2 years. I'll tell you, I'm a believer that he can still be a bullpen guy, David, but you're going to have to make it simple for him at the end of the game.
You think it could be a case of change of scenery, which a lot of guys benefit from. I wonder what Michael Kopech's new start would look like. But he it's not hard for me to imagine the Sox moving on, getting what they can, and Michael Kopech in a year from now being a guy who starts the season, you know, 10-2 back in rotation because he's suddenly unlocked whatever was keeping
him back. He's not a rotation guy, never has been. Okay, so to me, the salvation for Michael Kopech and the White Sox right now is they don't have a for sure closer, right? So take Michael Kopech, take away a couple pitches, and say you're a slider fastball pitcher. You're going to get your slider over for a strike in the ninth inning to the first hitter. And from that point on, you're going to dominate with your fastball and place your breaking ball in there where you need it. You're going to be the Bobby Jenks of this era.
Okay? Wow. So you think you reduce his pitch repertoire and he'll be more effective because he won't have as much to consider between pitches and maybe his control and command will improve?
Keep it simple. And more importantly, something that we miss about an athlete, let the athlete, the baseball athlete, feel good about himself again. Because this is a baseball athlete that doesn't feel very good about himself.
That's obvious every time he talks. Every time he talks, I just want you want to go find your dog and hug your dog because you feel so like, oh my gosh, am I depressed? He's got no confidence. And I think he carries that onto the mound, that lack of confidence. And so it's difficult to have command when you lack confidence.
Two things that also bother me about baseball, and that is Ethan Katz and the pitching people are very good with the White Sox. Not everybody can resonate with every pitcher, okay? Go hire a Bobby Jenks before the baseball season starts, and he's the manager of an independent league team. Go have him talk to this guy. The conversations they have and the belief of a guy like Bobby Jenks, who had such a troubled life before he became a valuable part of the White Sox championship team. He's the ideal guy. Somebody that's close, somebody that had trouble starting, somebody that's had trouble, you know, in life and then became a good athlete. These are the people that you try to bring in to salvage what should still be a good baseball career for Michael Kopech.
It couldn't hurt, Bruce. Before we get out of here, let's end the show like we began it, looking at the White Sox and the trade this week of Dylan Cease to the Padres. Wanted to know, so what that does to the organizational, the minor league system. When Chris Getz was elevated to GM, and I think there was some controversy there, we don't need to revisit that. But how would you assess what this trade does to what the White Sox are trying to do to their minor league system and where that puts them maybe overall? MLB Pipeline rated the top 30, the top minor league systems in baseball. The Cubs came in at number 2. The Padres, where the Sox got their prospects from, were number 4. How has Chris Getz attacked this in a way that has helped the White Sox elevate on those rankings?
I think the most important thing is reshuffling, getting rid of guys first. You know, he had a stronger comment as any baseball executive I've heard in the last 30 years in the fall saying, I think it was around Christmas time, maybe the winter meetings, saying, I don't like the team. I don't like the players on the team. He basically said, I don't like what we have, okay? It's a strong comment from a general manager. It's an honest comment.
It's honest. He took some heat for it, but it was also candid.
Because he was saying, I don't dislike these guys personally.
It was accountable.
Yeah. They're not baseball players that show up and expect if they don't win that day, they're not upset about it. I think you'd walk around the White Sox locker room last year and it would be like, okay, you know, we're going to lose another ball game today. So what? The season will be over soon. As a baseball man and as a former player and as a really smart young executive. He saw this with the White Sox. So I think it's elimination and then addition. And I think the addition part is coming. It's not going to be necessarily easy, but I think they've identified some good young players. I'm not one of these guys that goes, oh, we're rated the number 10th farm system. We're going to be better next year. It's not necessarily working that way, but getting better players, getting better makeup, I applaud the White Sox for doing that.
12 days away from opening day, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Maybe next Saturday we can do our predictions. Those are always fun to bring back.
Yeah, we're always looking stupid the rest of the year.
I don't know. I think that maybe I had a couple last year that came true. We just conveniently ignored them.
It's a good thing you're not going to be – don't break your arm patting yourself.
I'm just saying. I think that I picked Ohtani for doing something, and he did a lot.
You picked Ohtani to do...
That wasn't exactly out on a limb, but I remember getting some abuse from you for that.
For Ohtani?
Yes, I think it was.
I said I didn't like Ohtani?
You picked Luis Robert to do something. Well, anyway, next week we'll do our predictions.
Bad. Wasn't a bad pick.
And hold each other responsible and accountable. And you know what you can do tomorrow here right on the score? Tune in between 6 and 8. Tomorrow's Selection Sunday, also St. Patrick's Day. Tune in 6 to 8 for BetQL's Countdown to Tip-Off as Nick Costos, our guy, and Ken Barkley break down the brackets immediately after the release. Who will be the best bets to cut down the nets? Don't know, but find out. Countdown to Tip-Off on BetQL tomorrow, 6 to 8, right here on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. We have some people to thank.
Don't forget, more baseball on The Score every Sunday, including starting tomorrow with Hit and Run.
Hit and Run's back.
It's back.
Spiegs is back.
Spiegs is back.
Is he going to sing?
I hope not, but
hope so.
He always puts together a great baseball show.
That is so great.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's terrific.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there this weekend, and enjoy responsibly a great time.
Absolutely. Thank you to Robbie Triano, our great producer. Thank you to Rick Sutcliffe, who joined us and had a great conversation and interview. And thank you, Bruce, for showing up and getting Sut and everything else.
People can follow me on Twitter, David, at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com, where I write both Cubs and Sox. David, baseball season is approaching. I could not be more excited.
Cannot wait. It's a good way to interrupt draft talk and all of the QB1 debates right here in Chicago. Thank you for listening. Talk to you Monday on the Mully and Haw Show. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio, 670thescore.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays? The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.